Morning again.
Morning again. May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Jason Troia. I am here with Attorney Stuart Dorner. We're here on behalf of the appellant, Derek Strickland. As this court is aware, a lot of the claims in the previous case have been raised also by Mr. Strickland. And he, too, has alleged an alibi that I believe in the state's brief. Basically, the state agreed that, yes, he did set forth an alibi. Compared to Mr. Newman, he was a little more direct that he was somewhere other than the place of the shooting during the relevant time frame. And he broke it down by, I was here, then I was here, then I was here. To be more specific, he's with a nephew. Nephew's got a basketball tournament going on, so they go and they get the haircut. But when they get to the haircut place, the barbers are running a little behind. So they first go and get some food at a gas station and Burger King, get gassed up, go to Burger King, then they head back, get their hair done, and then they go on after the basketball tournament to a family gathering. And so he accounts for basically the whole morning and afternoon when the state alleges the shootings happened.
So but the significance of it is with respect to having a hearing or not having a hearing. Finish the sentence. This would require a hearing? Is that
well, I think both of them would require a hearing. Right. Because in Newman's case, as I was talking about, he had to account for a time period. We don't have ShotSpotter. We don't have an eyewitness that said it happened at this time. So he's got to account for a time period. And if you're in more than one place during that time frame, you have to list both places. So that's what Strickland did as well. He accounted for the whole day. So I think they're both should be given hearings. But what the state has responded with, and the district court may have mentioned, is, well, yeah, but what about this surviving eyewitness? He pointed them out from lineups. And lo and behold, these two guys pointed out from lineups had some type of phone call interaction, attempted phone calls, completed phone calls that morning, some hours before the alleged shooting. So his name, as this court knows, is Jose Pereira Gutierrez. His story is Morales wants some cocaine. So he goes to Noriega, and Noriega gets Herrera Gutierrez involved. Noriega, along with Herrera Gutierrez, will bring the cocaine to Morales. And when they do that morning, Morales is there. He cuts it. He samples it. And he is going to sell it to the two suspects. After sampling the cocaine and cutting it up on this table with a razor blade, the suspect, identified as Newman, says, I'm going to get some money to buy this cocaine, starts to exit this office, turns around with a gun, makes all three of them get face down, lie down, face down, bags over their head, pop, 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 right in the back of the head, execution style, point blank range, runs off with cocaine. That's the story. Now, that's an incredible story. He is super lucky that somehow, after the suspects at point blank range, on an unmoving target, were able to hit suspect or victim one, victim two, and somehow miss victim three. Number two, he says they're all lying down. Well, how come victim number two, Noriega, has a spent shell casing under his body? How does it get under his body if he's laying flat? Doesn't work that way. Blood splatter evidence. Ceiling. Wall. Ground. Adjacent room. Not going to happen from point blank range, execution style, lying face down. So forensically, story didn't match. In addition, the forensics tested razor blade, table, no cocaine residue in that room. Autopsy of Mr. Morales, who sampled the cocaine. No drugs present, no cocaine present in a system. Forensically, it's not matching the story. They look at footprints. There's only one set of footprints exiting that crime scene that's not police-issued boots. What happened to the three exiting, the two suspects plus plus our incredible surviving victim. They also found some fingerprints, palm prints during their investigation, no matches. When they compared them to Herrera Gutierrez, his prints on file were too faint to be checked against the prints found at the crime scene, and the police never bothered to have him come in and present himself for some new prints to see if maybe this unbelievable, incredible story is just that. Here's this sole surviving witness who is lucky as heck to be alive. You know, maybe he's not so credible. There was another witness that testified at the trial, and he had a very minimal role, but all he said was, at trial, yeah, around the afternoon there, you know, between 12:30 and 1 or whatever, I did see a Hispanic male walking away from that area. And so the state called him to try and support, hey, see, it matches Herrera Gutierrez because he's a Hispanic male walking away from the scene. But again, post-conviction, we're trying to expand the record, look at the actual police reports. When that witness talked to police, he didn't identify him as a Hispanic male. He identified that person walking as a white male. So when Newman, when Strickland, where they're confronted with, well, what about this sole surviving eyewitness who picked them out? When you look at the evidence, it does not corroborate his story. It does not support it. And that's why Mr. Strickland and Mr. Newman, they're asking for this evidentiary hearing to bring all this out and show the court. You know, this court, in its opinion, was saying, hey, look, you got a surviving eyewitness, and you have corroborative cell phone evidence. But you weren't equipped with all the facts because they were never presented at the trial level. And so that's why we're here on post-conviction petition. So, just want to make sure I didn't miss anything.
Do you believe the existing post-conviction filing is sufficient to warrant a hearing, or could you comment on a potential amendment?
Yes. I think these, Mr. Strickland, for similar reasons as Mr. Newman, should be granted first an opportunity to amend. Because, you know, this was a case that they filed their petitions, and it was, almost a year, I think, before it was resolved, and maybe at least 9 months before the state ever got their reply on file. And with the year deadline these folks have from the time that this court issues its opinion or the final result, you know, these individuals in this particular case where they're confined in an institution, they have limited access to legal resources, they have zero legal training, they might be an expert on what they were doing that day, but they're not a legal expert. And so that's why I was suggesting in one of the petitions it was a little hard to parse through and convoluted. But yes, I mean, with the new issues that they have found subsequent to their original petition, under the circumstances of this case where there's no prejudice to the state, the state was actually the one that was tardy in all these matters. I think that a new district court judge, an opportunity to amend, and an evidentiary hearing is in order on the majority of the issues raised. And I will, unless you have an immediate question, reserve the last minute, 20 seconds for rebuttal. Thank you.
Morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska, the appellee in this matter. First, I'll address the motion to amend. In order to be denied a request to amend, there needs to be a request to deny, and Strickland withdrew his one and only request. It's clear from the record, Strickland's motion to amend was no longer pending after the court confirmed with him that he did not seek leave to amend that day. It was not up to the court to notify Strickland to file a second motion prior to its entry of the final order. He had 4 months to file an amendment. He obviously at the hearing had something contemplated that he wanted to amend. He just said, we're not doing it today. And then he didn't do it for 4 months thereafter. And it's just not up to the district court to have held his hand in order to do that. As for the ineffective assistance of trial counsel claims, the state maintains the district court correctly denied Strickland evidentiary hearing, again, because his claims were either insufficiently pled or they're without merit. All I heard today was basically an attack on Herrera Gutierrez's testimony, but that was believed by the jury. His credibility was he was cross-examined highly, his credibility challenged, and the jury believed him. He was the only eyewitness. As for Mr. Toria mentioned Martinez-Reyes, that he previously told law enforcement that he saw a white male walking away, I would note the record shows that Herrera Gutierrez is a light-skinned male, and in any event, I really don't think that Mr. Martinez-Reyes lent much support to the state's case other than possibly confirming the route that Herrera Gutierrez took after the shootings.
Could you comment on the implications of the allegations with respect to the alibi in this motion?
Sure. His allegations are sufficient. The state concede that. I don't believe he can show prejudice, again, for the same reasons I argued for Newman, that Herrera Gutierrez separately identified Newman and Strickland as the perpetrators, and then the cell phone evidence corroborated that. I just don't know how he gets that lucky to identify two separate people who have been in contact with each other all morning long and contacting the victims in this case. His allegations didn't account for that. And as for his argument about his cell phone call at 12:34 that was serviced by different towers and the one by the shop, the jury heard that. That was argued to the jury. And again, they obviously didn't believe it. I don't have any further comments on the rest of the claims, so if this court has questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Can you respond to the argument that Mr. Herrera Gutierrez was not a credible witness because of the various facts that your opposing counsel mentioned?
I think that was up to the jury to consider the credibility, and because he was the only eyewitness, they believed him. I don't think that any of his allegations with regards to the other witnesses, they either are going to be inadmissible hearsay or they're not going to affect his testimony being corroborated by that cell phone evidence.
Were all of the absence of other forensics to which opposing counsel referred brought out at the trial to begin with?
Argued to the jury. The jury was fully informed of the lack of DNA, the lack of drug residue, everything that counsel pointed out today, argued to the jury. So again, that goes to the no prejudice. Okay, he has to show a reasonable probability that the outcome of the proceeding would have been different, and he can't when the jury heard everything he's been arguing.
Is that accurate in terms of the record with respect to each of the forensic items that Mr. Troyer mentioned?
There was a lot in his motion.
Yeah, there was, but is this correct? If I heard the argument, the blood in the next room as opposed to one location, no residue on the table.
I believe that's true.
Each of those items that is argued would be favorable to Mr. Strickland.
And I don't know about in the other room. I think there was blood on an adjoining door, perhaps. The no residue is correct, but there was still a razor and a drug scale found there. And as for another one, I think was a casing was under Mr. Noriega. That's not true. It was found near him, and they didn't know if it was under him because they had to move the body. But again, the state maintains this was all, it was part of their defense. The jury heard all of it. I don't know how he can show the prejudice prong of Strickland. If I may, Justice Stacy, from the previous argument, I think I remembered he filed a motion for new trial based on newly discovered evidence that included the recusal. The motion for new trial, newly discovered evidence, was about juror, non-juror communications. And I think that actually benefits the state because if this alibi was so important, you would have thought it would have been brought up in one of his numerous pleadings before his post-conviction, and it wasn't.
Thank you. Any questions?
No further questions? We ask you to come to judgment of the district court.
You're excused. Mr. Troy has some time, is that right?
1 minute, 1 minute.
Sir?
Thank you. Just briefly, the jury heard it all. He can't show prejudice. That's where I disagree. Again, we're expanding the record. This is post-conviction. The jury didn't hear Mr. Strickland's alibi, to factor that in. The jury didn't hear about Alex Pepra, who heard pow, pow, pow at 1:15. They didn't hear from Sonia Pace, who might have seen the suspects involved in this around the same time that Pepra's hearing pow, pow, pow. So they didn't hear everything.
Judge.
It was a tie. As to the forensics that you mentioned before, the jury heard all of those.
Yes,
okay.
They did.
All right.
But again, to factor in everything to assess credibility, there's no competing timeline. There's no competing alibi for where these two are. And, you know, for what it's worth, when they're going through the motion for new trial and they're bringing up all the jury misconduct and stuff, one of the jurors puts in his affidavit that I was going to vote not guilty. The other 11 persuaded me to vote guilty because the defendants never testified. So I know, you know, what we can consider, what we can't consider, but that's in the record of how it went down. And that's what I'm trying to say. There's prejudice because the alibi and the other ear witness, not eyewitness, that heard the shots at 1:15, they never got to factor that in.
So here's my question, right when the light goes on.
Right.
You've been talking about credibility evidence with respect to the eyewitness. Could you, if it's possible, thread it back into one of the post-conviction allegations in one of the assignments of error? Rather than, your discussion has been pretty general, and it's been hard for me to
sure.
put it in one of the buckets of the claims that have been alleged in the post-conviction motion. It's not clear to me which one of those buckets you think your argument fits in.
Sure. So ineffective assistance of counsel in not noticing in the alibi, noticing the state that there's an alibi here and not offering that evidence of alibi. Ineffective assistance of counsel in not producing Mr. Pepra with his or Sonia Pace with their competing timelines to challenge the state on theirs to give the jury something to consider. In not challenging ineffective assistance of trial counsel in not challenging the eyewitness on Hispanic versus Caucasian in his description, you know, leaving that part out and suggesting that this individual that he saw more closely fit Jose Herrera Gutierrez than he originally said. So I think that's where they come in. Thank you.
Thank you. You're excused. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.